Yeah. All right, so we are going to get started. We don't want to waste one more minute of this exciting hour we have together. But how's the energy in this room? Lovely. Just what I would expect from a room full of power women. My name is Jill Sharp. I am a performance coach with the Johnson & Johnson Human Performance Institute. And I am honored to be here representing the Watermark Women's Conference, representing the Johnson & Johnson team, or family of companies, to support the mission that the conference is on, to help we as, well, women and men who are looking to do what we do better. And more specifically, that mission is to increase the representation of women in leadership roles by empowering them to make their mark in and for their companies, their careers, and their communities. Something that you are doing and are only going to be able to do better as a result of our time together. And so for those of you who know Johnson & Johnson, it shouldn't be any surprise that we would be here to support this effort. And when we have a rich history of championing women at work, at home, and globally, certainly in our product line and services, our philanthropic partnerships, our internal programs designed to care for and support and advance the careers of women. Any of you in the Women's Leadership Initiative with Johnson & Johnson? I see many hands. Yeah, 5,000 plus women and men strong. But that is just one example of what we do to support women in their careers and in their lives. And I personally am from the Human Performance Institute and get to support that function by helping men and women, both internally and externally, to maximize their energy, to be able to bring their best to who and what matters to them most. And when I talk about energy, that's physical energy, emotional energy, the ability to be confident and positive and optimistic, mentally, to help improve cognitive function, the ability to focus, laser focus, and to bring your full and best engagement. And lastly, your spiritual energy, that sense of meaning and purpose and intent around everything that we do. So you can see why I might want to be here today with Malika Chopra as she talks about living with intent. In my experience and in working with people around the globe, purpose is the one thing that changes everything. And she's going to get an opportunity to take a much deeper dive in that. So to make sure that I don't miss any of the great tee-up and introduction of Miss Malika Chopra, and I may already because I've already missed my notes. So the author of Living with Intent and has her own website, intent.com. And I'm going to let her share a little bit more about her story and the impact that she is making and bring Ms. Malika Chopra up to the stage. Thank you.
Hi. Good morning. Let me get this. Good morning. How is everyone? Awesome. I'm awesome, too, because I just met a bunch of my friends from Kellogg who I haven't seen for a while. Yay. I went to Kellogg Business School, and so some of my classmates are here. I am so thrilled to be here this morning. In fact, I had no idea this was such a huge conference. I was sitting in the back of the opening and just in awe of all these women here and just the energy here. So it's a real honor for me to be here. I'm going to talk about living with intent. I have a book that did come out a year ago. It's called Living with Intent, My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy. And so I'm going to basically just share some stories with you, and maybe we'll do one or two exercises, and also we will do a short meditation together and kind of get anchored and set our intents for the day. For those of you who haven't meditated, I promise it won't be painful, and it will be short and sweet and hopefully lovely. So I'm going to begin with some stories, and let me just, I never use a PowerPoint, but I forgot to print out some things, so I thought it would be easier to use it. So excuse me if I'm going back and forth. I'm going to begin. Oops. This is why I never use PowerPoint. All right, well, maybe we won't use it. Ah, great, there you go. Yep, we're good. All right, so I'm going to start. Many of you may be familiar with my father, Deepak Chopra. So the first question I always get is, what is it like being the daughter of Deepak Chopra? So I'm just going to get that out of the way and answer the question for you. So I grew up in Boston. My parents were young immigrants who came to this country when my dad was doing his residency here. It was in 1970, and at that time there was a shortage of doctors actually in the U.S. So they were recruiting doctors from outside the country. And so my parents were about 20 and 21 years old, I think, and they came to this country with $8 in their pocket and just started a life here. And I am very proud to be able to say that my parents are very much the poster children of the American dream. They worked really hard. My dad did his residency in Boston, began in New Jersey, then moved to Boston. And I will tell you, my memories as a young child are actually ones in which my dad was really stressed out, drank a lot, smoked incessantly, and whenever he was home, my parents were fighting all the time. So we were actually happier when he wasn't around. And I have a very clear memory of being 9 years old and my dad coming home one day, and there was a different energy. And my dad himself had been probably going through his own midlife crisis, where as a doctor, he was working 24/7. He felt that he was just pushing pills and medicine to people and really didn't have a sense of fulfillment. So he was walking in Cambridge and walked by a meditation center. He went in and learned how to meditate. And despite growing up in India, my family was very much a Western-focused family, not religious, really hadn't done things like meditation and all. My grandfather was actually a great, he was the first Western-trained doctor out of India. And so we grew up in that kind of environment. So when my father actually sat and meditated for the first time, he had a very dramatic aha experience. He had this feeling for the first time in his life where he had peace and quiet and a sense of knowing who he was. So my dad's quite a dramatic person. And he came home and he took my mom and put her in the car and took her back to the meditation center to learn meditation right then. And my mom, who's a very anchored, emotionally stable person, for her it was like coming home. And my brother and I learned the next day. The day after that, my dad made his brother and their entire family learn. My mom's sister and their entire family learn. Within the week, the entire Indian community in Boston had learned. And so, that kind of began his journey. And I always say that for me, and many people, often the second or third question I get asked is, as parents, how do we teach our children about stress and meditation and things like that? And I say, from my experience, my family changed dramatically when my father began this practice, because it went from a very stressful environment to him kind of adjusting his life. I said he's melodramatic, so in 24 hours, he stopped drinking, he stopped smoking, and his life really changed dramatically. And suddenly, our family life was so much better. My parents weren't fighting as much. My dad was around. Suddenly, he'd say, oh, so what grade are you in? He'd kind of pay attention to us. And so it really was like our family life changed. So as children, we wanted to engage in a practice that was making my parents happier. And so I feel very grateful for the gift of meditation, which was a technique that I have used throughout my life. I'll say up front, and we'll get more into this, I'm the most irregular meditator on the planet, so no one should feel guilty if they don't stick with their practice. But it is a great tool. And my brother and I were basically the guinea pigs for all my father's experiments. So after meditation, it became hypnosis to get over my addiction to chocolate, which was a total failure because I'm still addicted to chocolate. Playing mind games, memory techniques. We used to have a friend that we'd talk to on the Ouija board. And so we had a fun childhood. And I really am grateful for that. But one of the things that my dad did teach my brother and I about early on was the power of intention. So this phrase is something that we would repeat daily after our meditation. And it goes, I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and set the goals I will achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. So my dad would ask my brother and I, what do you ask for? So obviously we'd ask for tickets to the Celtics, a trip to Hawaii, a new Atari game, shows how old I am now. And my dad would listen patiently and then he would say, okay, fine, we'll work on that. But what about asking for love, compassion, inspiration, a sense of purpose? And we were taught on a daily basis to ask for the qualities in our life that would make us happier, healthier, more connected, and have more of a sense of purpose. And so I talk a lot about intention, and intents are very different from goals. Goals come from the mind. Goals are task-oriented. You know, we have an end goal. Intents come from the soul. They really come from that deep place when we connect to ourselves, a quiet place, when we ask questions. Who am I? What do I want? How can I serve? And they're seeds, you know. Sometimes we don't even know what our intent is, but we plant some sort of seed. And, you know, we give it time to kind of nurture and blossom into a beautiful tree. So intents really are those deep, your deepest desires of who you aspire to be as individuals, members of your family, of your community, or citizens of Mother Earth. So I grew up with this incredible anchoring experience. And yet, I have had myself quite a messy professional journey, and I'll share a few stories which I find sometimes help people reflect on their own story. So I grew up in this great environment. I got to meet amazing people, and most of the people who came to my family often were struggling. Many people begin the self-help journey from a place actually of pain. It may be that they've lost a loved one, that they're going through a divorce, you know, they're having work problems. And so often in struggle, we find these times when we start asking different questions. So I grew up surrounded by people like that. But honestly, my brother and I had a great childhood. I went to college. And I had some great opportunities. You know, I actually grew up with Michael Jackson, so I helped him launch his foundation for children, and then went through all the drama with Michael when that kind of fell apart. And I decided when I was around 23 that my dream job would actually be to work for MTV, because it was just the coolest place to work, frankly. And so I set the intent to work there, and I got a job after interviewing for six months, I think, working as an administrative assistant in their New York office for the vice president of international marketing. And MTV, this is in the early 90s, was about to launch internationally. So I convinced them that I was the person to go launch them in India, telling them, oh, you know, I speak Hindi, I know all these musicians, I know tons of people in India. Of course, I didn't really know anyone in India. I'd never worked there. I'd grown up in Boston. But I was able to convince them to send me to India. So I was actually the first person for MTV when they launched in India. And for about a year, I was the only person in the country because most of the team was in Singapore and London, and I had the dream job. I was 23 years old. My business card could get me into any nightclub. I produced videos with bands like No Doubt in the streets of Delhi. And I really had like an accelerated learning of business. Got to do ad sales, business development, marketing, satellite distribution. It was really an incredible, incredible experience at a very young age. And so I kind of had my dream job. I ended up meeting my husband at the first ever rave in New Delhi. Something that is kind of un-Chopra-esque. And life was great. I mean, it was so much fun. And so there was a day, though, that was quite transformational for me. We had just sold our first ever kind of sponsorship for the channel to a big multinational company, and it was a big deal. And we were driving from kind of the fancy corporate building in Bombay in our fancy air-conditioned car to our five-star hotel at the Taj where I lived. And as we were driving in our car, I think we had a bottle of champagne and everyone was celebrating this huge success. And we're driving. Now, for those of you who have ever been to Bombay, you know that there's a lot of traffic. And actually, in those days, now they have these flyovers, so you can kind of avoid a lot of the slums. But in those days, you actually had to drive through the streets and through slums and see a lot of poverty. And so we were driving back to our hotel, kind of celebrating in our lovely car. And we got stuck in a traffic jam, nothing unusual for Bombay. But this time, we really just weren't moving. And so we kind of were stalled. It took us like about an hour to go what should have taken 5 minutes. And as we inched along, we saw what was causing the traffic jam. It was a group of children, the poorest of the poor children. You could see the malnutrition in their stomachs, no shoes, ripped up clothing, really the poorest of the poor. And these children were kind of standing in the street by a roadside stall, and they were just crowded and they were staring at something. And when I say a stall, it was literally like, you know, just a shack and, you know, they sell kind of toothpaste and things like that. And as we inched along, we saw that there was a television hanging by wires in this shack. And on the television were American kids grinding to hip-hop music on the beaches of Santa Monica, where I live right now. And there was our logo, our business logo. And everyone in my car began to cheer because here was a double success. We had just sold our first ad sales package. And look, MTV had literally reached every corner of the planet. And these kids were crowded around and watching. And while everyone in my car cheered, my heart stopped. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, I had grown up in this environment where I asked, you know, what are the qualities I want? How can I serve? And I realized while I had the dream job, I wasn't serving in the way that was right for me. And so I kind of made a transition. I made a decision that I'm going to transition. This isn't my path. And so I kind of started to get clarity at a young age of what I didn't want to do. But honestly, I had no idea what I did want to do. And so when I talk about having a messy journey, you know, I've had many kind of points in my life, and I'm sure many of you have had similar points in your life, where we kind of feel like we're on the path, things are good, we're healthy, you know, good relationships, we're liking our job, and then life, something happens. And we kind of get off track, and then we're back in kind of a place where we don't know what we're doing. And then we kind of have to come back and get back on the journey. So I feel like the journey is a messy journey for all of us. So I did leave MTV. I got married. I ended up at Kellogg. It's a whole other story because I dropped out of Kellogg and then went back, but that I'm going to avoid right now. And I'm an entrepreneur by nature, and so I've had many startup companies, most of which have failed, and I just kind of keep doing that. But I was 30 years old, and I got pregnant. And, you know, as with, I'm sure, many women, I was so excited. You know, I'd always wanted to be a mom, and it was kind of a good time for my husband and I to have a kid. I was, like, full of love and inspiration and hope. And one morning, I was 5 months pregnant, and I got a phone call. It was about 6:30 in the morning, maybe 6:30. And it was my father on the other end of the line. And my father was sobbing uncontrollably. We couldn't even understand what he was saying, so I like gave the phone to my husband, and my husband said, just put the television on. We put the TV on, and it was 9/11, and the first plane had crashed into the first building. And as I was speaking to my father, the second plane crashed into the building. It was traumatic, but my father had just made an emergency landing in Detroit. And he had boarded a plane at the same time as my brother. And my father thought my brother was on one of the planes. And because if you remember that morning, it was so confused, all the news, and we didn't know where the planes were coming from. So for about an hour, we thought my brother was on one of the planes. And we were freaking out, trying to find the taxi that took him wherever it may be. And after about an hour, we did, fortunately for my family, realized that my brother wasn't on one of the planes. But of course, then the realization of what was actually happening started to dawn on us from the panic. And my mom was actually on a plane flying from London to Boston, which turned around and went back. So it was just a really chaotic and stressful morning, like it was for many people. And I think I got over that day, but the next day I was going for a walk and I fainted while going for a walk, and so I was 5 months pregnant, and they rushed me to the hospital just for observation of the baby. And I sat in a hotel room, and suddenly all that excitement about becoming a mother became fear and anxiety and thinking, oh my God, what kind of world am I bringing my child into? And so I said earlier, many people embark on the journey of self-discovery from moments like these. And so even though I had grown up in this environment, for the first time in my life, I really sat in this hospital room and I thought, who am I? Really, who am I? How do I want to teach this innocent soul I'm bringing into this planet about the world, about people, about compassion, about love? And that really became the seed for my first book, which is called 100 Promises to My Baby, which I wrote a very long time ago. And that was really my intent to serve as a mother, both for my children and for myself. And so promises like intents, you know, it was like the seeds of what I wished for our family. And so then, you know, I wrote a few books, two books, and I ended up becoming, you know, like many, I'm sure in this room, a mom, an entrepreneur. So I have my business and I raised money for a company. I had my kids growing up. And again, you know, life was good. Life was super busy, but it was fun and things were moving along. And, you know, I started teaching and I found myself one day speaking to an audience. So it was smaller than this audience. And I was talking about intention and wellness and, you know, why the benefits of meditation. And I found that while I was talking to the audience, I was having a parallel conversation in my head. So the conversation in my head was, I can't believe I just had that chocolate chip cookie and double macchiato before getting on stage because I'm so wired right now. I have to go pick up the dry cleaning, get the dog food. Oh my God, I forgot to put the permission slip in for my daughter's field trip. And I realized that while I was talking about being present and et cetera, I was completely somewhere else and a total hypocrite. So to deal with my own kind of drama, I decided that I'd get everyone to meditate so I didn't have to worry about them. So I asked everyone to close their eyes and I stood on stage and I thought, oh my God, what is going on here? And I realized, like, I am so tired. I'm so stressed out. I'm so busy. At the end of the day, like, I've been running nonstop, and yet at the end of the day, I don't even know what I've done. Plus, I have all this guilt. Like, either I'm at school, like, doing my kids' you know, St. Patrick's Day lunch, or I'm at work, you know, meeting my investors and talking to them, and I'm constantly feeling guilty that I'm not there, and then, you know, I'm just kind of running on this kind of roulette, and I don't know how to stop. So I made a decision at that time that I was going to really look at my life and actually really explore what it means to live with intent. And so for me, in the past, I had done that also kind of through writing and working on books. So I decided to start meditating again. I actually, you know, I've been meditating for 35 years. I'm 44 now. And yet many of those years I wouldn't meditate and then I would. And I had gone through a phase where probably 5 to 7 years, I was like, I don't have time for that. And so I made this commitment that I was going to commit to my meditation practice again. I ended up taking my kids to my parents' house in San Diego for a weekend. And my dad was sitting on the computer on Twitter. He's always on Twitter. And he does them all himself. And so he was sitting on Twitter. And I thought, you know what? Let me talk to my dad. So the rest of the world talks to my dad and comes to my dad for advice. In my family, we don't. So this was actually my first time. And so I kind of went, and my kids were watching a movie. My mom's making our Indian dinner. And I sat with my dad and I said, you know, Papa, I need to talk to you. And so he was busy on the computer. He's like, yeah, what's going on? I said, you know, I'm stressed. I'm feeling out of balance. I'm a little bit lost. And my dad stopped at the computer, kind of looked at me. And then there was utter panic in his eyes as he tried to look for my mom to come and deal with me. And I said, no, listen, I'm okay. There's nothing major, but like I'm feeling a little lost. I don't have kind of a sense of balance. And so I literally watched my dad transition from panic dad mode to Deepak mode. And then he was like, okay, we can figure this out. And so my journey really began with this conversation with my father, where he actually pulled out some science about brain integration, work by Dr. Dan Siegel, who is a neuroscientist at UCLA, and we looked at a mind-body platter that he's done, which really looks at brain coherence and the important aspects of leading a healthy physical and emotional life. And so that began this journey of living with intent. And I was very fortunate. You know, I have access to great teachers. So over the year, I went and I talked to people like Andrew Weil, Marianne Williamson, Eckhart Tolle. In fact, I thought, okay, who is my dream person? Like the person that for me really represents living with intent. And it was Carol Stern, who's the head of UNICEF. I thought, you know, in my mind, if anyone's living with purpose and serving, like she is doing that. So I reached out to her and she was so gracious and said, yes, come meet me. And I went to New York and had all these questions on like service and purpose for her. And when I walked into her office, she had a totally messy desk. There was a suitcase by the desk because she was like flying to Rwanda in any minute. And yet she was totally stressed out because her 14-year-old son had forgotten his homework. And so she was trying to like coordinate the logistics of, you know, his kind of daily life before she left for Africa. And I realized, oh my God, her life's as messed up as mine. Like, she doesn't have her act together either. And it was very reassuring. So I got to talk to many people. And what I did for the book was I was able to kind of integrate some interviews, but really with a path to intent. And I'm going to go through it quickly because I want to kind of get into an experiential exercise. But using the acronym INTENT. I is for incubate. So incubate for me really means recommitting, or maybe for the first time, to silence, to going to a quiet place. You know, we're so busy all the time. We're always kind of running. But creativity, insight comes from a quiet place. And so incubate for me is really quieting your mind to tapping into your deepest intentions. And I am a big believer in meditation, but for other people, it may be a walk, in nature. It may be through a yoga class, although I recommend quiet yoga. You know, find moments of silence. And it's out of that silence when we ask questions that sometimes we get great insights. And incubate for me was similar to the idea of when we have a baby, you know. It takes 9 months to nurture a new life, to nurture something that's so magical. And so similarly with Intense, you know, incubate represents that it takes time sometimes to know what we want and who we are. Notice, it is noticing our internal dialogue, noticing the messages our body sends us. I noticed that my internal dialogue was full of things like, I'm stressed, I'm overwhelmed, you know, I'm exhausted. And one of the other tests that my dad used to do with my brother and I, games, he used to make us go through a day of not criticizing, condemning, or complaining. And it is really amazing when you start to notice your internal dialogue and then make a decision to shift how your external reality changes. Notice was also noticing the messages my body was sending me. So, you know, I'm always struggling with sugar. And when I started to really notice that how that made me feel and when I started making shifts, I found that for all my diets and cleanses, just noticing the messages my body made a difference. This is the balance wheel, but we're going to go through a different exercise. T is for trust. Trust is trusting your intuition. You know, many of us get stuck in making decisions by, you know, assessing data and strategy, which is all very important. But sometimes when it comes to personal life decisions, we have to listen to our heart, listen to our intuition. Trust is also trusting the universe is going to support us, which often is really hard. And I'll come back to a story with that. E is for express. So I believe so strongly that we have to express our intents that I have an entire company, intent.com, where people are expressing their intents. Because I believe that when you actually say what you want, you take ownership of it, you put it out into the world, and you don't have to do it publicly. It could be just writing it down quietly. But you just kind of create the ritual of saying, this is important to me. And it's amazing when you do that, amazing things happen. Suddenly you'll start meeting people who want to support you. You start creating community around your intents as well. N is for nurture. So this actually was a great one for me. It's kind of being, this is about dealing with the guilt and dealing with kind of the constant self-dialogue that we're having, which is, I think, a session that I'm doing after this. And realizing that intention is not a straightforward path. Life is messy. It's a journey. We have to forgive ourselves. Nurture is also really important for women. You know, we are so busy taking care of our children, taking care of our parents, taking care of our teams at work. We're always taking care of other people, and yet we don't take care of ourselves. And so for me, this lesson really hit home. In my family, my grandparents live in India. My grandparents are getting old, and so we kind of rotate going to India to take care of my grandparents. And so it had come my time to go to India and spend a week with my grandparents. And so I went to India thinking, oh, look at me. I'm so great. I'm going to go take care of my grandparents. Good, Malika. And I got to India, and the first night I was there, I went to sleep, and I noticed suddenly there was a glass of water next to me. Then when I woke up the next time, I had a blanket on me. Then the next time, the blanket was off me, but the fan was on. Then in the morning, my grandfather came with the newspaper and a cup of tea. And I realized that no one takes care of me like that. Like, my grandparents were taking care of me. And for 1 week, I just, like, indulged in the love and the nurturing and the caring from my grandparents. And it kind of was really a dramatic insight that, you know, how can I take care of other people if I'm not being nurtured? And it doesn't mean that it has to be your grandparents, but sometimes we really need to take the time to do that ourselves. And then T is very important. I grew up in the self-help industry where often people say, oh, just say what you want and it will magically happen. I don't believe that. I believe we have to take action. And there is a time for SMART goals. There's a time to kind of really take the action and take the steps. And sometimes it's small steps that have huge impact. But you know, when that time comes, if you've done all this other work, you're coming from a place where you really, truly have the passion and the energy to take action in a very intentional way. So there is a phrase in the Upanishads, which is a great Indian text. And it says, you are what your deepest desire is. As is your desire, so is your intent. As is your intent, so is your will. As is your will, so is your deed. And as is your deed, so is your destiny. And so that, it really begins with our deepest desires. So with that, I would like to get into a meditation together. And like I said, please don't be intimidated if you haven't meditated before. This will be really simple and relaxing and a good way to start the day. So what I'd like you to do is sit comfortably. Put your books and your pens and your phones and everything away. And we're just going to take a few moments to be present. And we're going to do a really simple meditation. I'll explain it first. So I'm going to have you close your eyes and I'm going to ask you, and you don't have to do it now, I'll explain it first. I'm going to ask you just to mentally repeat the words, I am. I am. Now, I am is a vibrational sound. It's similar to om, aham, amen, amma, mama, Abraham, they all have this vibrational energy, which is the infinite I am to the finite. So om, amma. This is a vibrational sound. It's a healing sound. It's kind of why amma, mama, kids, you know, start to say those sounds. So we're going to use the words I am, and I'm going to have you close your eyes and mentally repeat them. Now, what will happen? So you'll mentally repeat I am, I am, I am. You'll say it 2 to 3 times, and then I guarantee you, within a few times, your mind will start wandering. You'll start thinking, oh God, I wish I had gone to the bathroom, or my stomach's grumbling, like, I hope the person next to me doesn't hear that, or, you know, I have to make this call right after this meeting. And so that's going to happen. That's completely normal and natural. In fact, it's what your mind wants to do. Your mind wants to wander. When you notice your mind has wandered, I want you to just consciously come back to the words, I am. I am. And so what's going to happen, it will be this natural flow of I am, thoughts, 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 I am, I am, I am. And what we do in this process is we start to slow down the cycle of thoughts. Because usually the way our mind works is one thought triggers another thought, triggers another thought, triggers another thought. When we start to kind of bring in a healing vibrational sound, we just start to break that cycle a bit, and we start to expand the space between thoughts. And that's what we do in meditation. That's when we get to that kind of more peaceful place. It's actually a place where we connect to our soul, to the place between our thoughts. So a quick exercise is, as you're listening to me, pay attention to the one who's listening. So as you're listening to me, pay attention to the one who's listening. And often the one who's listening is not the crazy thoughts. There's a presence there. And so what we're doing in meditation is we're just tapping into that presence a little bit. Okay? So we'll go ahead. And at the end of the meditation, which we'll just do for a few minutes to just settle down, I'm going to ask you to keep your eyes closed and I'm going to ask you a few questions. Don't feel the need to answer the questions. Just experience the answers. See what comes up and let it go. Okay? So sit comfortably. Close your eyes. Let's begin with a deep breath. In and out. And another one. In and out. And now mentally, in your head, just repeat the words, I am. I am. And when your attention drifts away from the sound, just come back to the words, I am. And we'll just sit in silence for a few minutes. Now I'd like you to keep your eyes closed, and you can stop repeating the words, I am. And I'm going to ask a few questions, four questions. Again, don't feel the need to intellectually answer these questions, but just experience the answers. Who am I? Who am I? What do I want? What do I want? How can I serve? How can I serve? And now I'd like you to shift your attention to your heart. And with your eyes closed, I'd like you to just think about what you are grateful for today. And now take a deep breath again in and out. In and out. And whenever you are ready, you can slowly open your eyes. So for some people, tears come, uncertainty comes, and you know, that's what intent starts from, that quiet place, asking, what do I want? How can I serve? Reconnecting with, sometimes I know for myself, you know, when I was going through this crazy stuff, I didn't even know who I was anymore. So it begins with going to quiet places and asking the questions. So to end, I'm going to share a story, which I did as a TEDx talk recently, and I know some of you have seen it. And it kind of epitomizes my journey of writing my book. On my kind of list of people I wanted to talk to, had Eckhart Tolle. He's the author of The Power of Now, and Oprah's like a big fan of his, and he's just a great teacher. And so he was at the top of my list as someone I wanted to speak with. And so I reached out to his office, and he doesn't really do many interviews, but again, because he's a friend of my father's, he agreed to meet with me. And I think I reached out to them in June, and I got a date in February, and we found a time where he was actually in San Francisco, and I was going to come and meet him. So it was a lot of logistics. I had plenty of time to read every single one of his books, watch every one of his YouTube videos, and I really came up with a very detailed list of questions that I wanted to engage during this very important conversation for my book. And so I woke up this February morning. You know, my kind of iPhone alarm went off. And I woke up that morning with the worst allergies I've ever had in my life. I swear to God, my nose was running, my eyes were itching, I was coughing and sneezing nonstop. I was such a mess that I thought, this is going to be so embarrassing to go and meet this great teacher when I can't even stop sneezing. And so I kind of debated for half a second that, you know, maybe I should just cancel the meeting. And then I realized it's taken me 9 months to get it, so I decided I'll just stuff myself with cold medicine and supplements and have my tea and my coffee and do all the things that I know can get me more high energy. And I started to get ready, and I saw that there was a text message that came from my father. And the text message said, good luck with the interview. Remember, he is always in the now. So I was like, what does that mean? So I was like, okay, whatever. I got ready. I headed to the airport. Got on my plane, and when I landed, there was another text message from my dad in the now. And so I kind of continued, went to the hotel that I was meeting him at, and met his assistant in the lobby. His assistant was really gracious. He said, Eckhart's really excited to meet you. I'm going to take you up. But I just need to let you know that you're going to have 15 minutes. And we'll go upstairs and I'll knock on the door after 15 minutes and you just get up and leave. So I started to pant. I said, oh, thank you so much. But in my head, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm screwed. Like, this is like the premise of my book. And how am I going to ask him questions in 15 minutes? And so I could feel my heart beating. I was sneezing again. My hands were sweating. But I was like very calm as we went up the elevator. And then another text message came from my dad in the now. I was like, shut up. And I put the phone off. So we went to the hotel room, knocked on the door, and as I said, I was full of anxiety. And when he opened the door, it was this really sweet and lovely presence, and he reminded me of my grandfather, and he said, come in, and I noticed I wasn't sneezing and stressed out anymore. And we sat down, and, you know, it took a few minutes of introduction, so I had my phone, like, right next to me looking at the time. And I told him I'm working on this book, and I'm really trying to understand what it means to live with intent. And Eckhart said, you know, intent is the most powerful force in the universe. So I sat forward with my pen, you know, ready to get the secrets of the universe revealed to me. And then he stopped. And he was just smiling. And so he said, do you hear that noise? So I like listened, and he's like, do you hear those church bells? So I was like, yeah, I hear the church bells, like the church bells. And he then started to tell me about when he was a child or a young adult, and where he worked, there was a church outside his office, and he would hear these bells, and the bells ringing in the distance reminded him of that time. He's telling me this lovely story, but I look at my watch and I'm like, okay, we're 7 minutes into my 15 minutes, like... It's nice about the bells, but tell me about intent. And he says, let's listen to the bells. So I was like, oh, okay. And so we sat there, and he had this beautiful smile on his face, and the bells were ringing. We're now into 8 minutes, 9 minutes. The bells just keep ringing and ringing. And ringing, and my kind of, I'm getting anxiety, and the damn bells would not stop ringing. And so I found myself again totally stressed out, trying to kind of, you know, just figure out now what question I'm going to ask. I have like 5 minutes, what am I going to do? And I finally decided, you know what? I just got to let go. I got to be present. And in the now. And I just need to listen to the bells with Eckhart Tolle. And so I let go, and I found that as soon as I let go, I felt peaceful. I felt happy. I felt connected. I was in the now with Eckhart Tolle listening to the bells. And it was a really beautiful experience. And I shifted from that goal orientation to that just kind of experience, that intentional presence to be with him. And it was a really beautiful experience. And as we sat there and the bells finally kind of subsided, there was a knock on the door and it was his assistant. And it was 15 minutes were up. So I got up to leave. And, you know, I kind of put my hands together to say thank you and started to head out. And then Eckhart said, no, 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 sit down, sit down. And he spent then an hour and a half with me talking about intention and purpose and what it means to live with a sense of purpose. And it was an incredible conversation. I wrote much of that in my book. And at one point I told him, I said, you know, I grew up in a family where we were taught that we all have a unique purpose, a way to serve. And I have to say, that stresses me out tremendously, because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a soccer mom. Like, I drive my kids from one activity to another activity, and that's what I do, you know, and I try to do other things in between. And I stress that I'm not serving in this way. Like, what is my purpose? And he answered with something which I want to leave with you. He said, you know, you have to remember it's the everyday people who are doing extraordinary things that are raising the frequency of the planet. And these are the frequency holders. So there is nothing more important that you can do than to be a soccer mom, but do it with presence, do it with purpose, do it with love, and do it with joy. So with that, I'd like to thank you so much for having me here today. Thank you, and I am here. I'm going to actually run to another panel and then do a book signing later. So have an absolutely wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you.